Okay.
Very good afternoon to all my brothers and sisters in the Dhamma. Today is the 15th of July, 2018. Our lesson 80 of the Six Patria Black Form Sutta. So now we get ready for our puja. Develop the faith, sadha, virya, then mindfully we shall commence the puja chanting. Namo Bhansi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Bhansi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Bhansi Sijia Moni Fo. Namo Kwansin Pusa. Namo Kwansin Pusa. Namo Kwansin Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Namo Fo Pusa. Arahang sama sambuddho bhagava buddhang bhagavantang abhivademi. Swakato bhagavata dhammo dhammang namasami. Supatipanno bhagavato savakasangho sanghaṃ namāmi. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang saranang gacchami. Dhammang saranang gacchami. Sanghang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Dutiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami. Tatiyampi sanghang saranang gacchami. Panatipata veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Adinadana veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Kamesu micchachara veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Musavada veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Surameraya majjhapamadatthana veramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us pay respect to Tripa Jama, Buddhang Pujayami. Dhammang Pujayami. Sanghang Pujayami. Okay, you can be seated. Then let us. For opening a sutta. Verse for opening a sutta. The unsurpassed, profound, and wonderful Dhamma is difficult to encounter in hundreds of millions of aeons. I now see and hear it, receive and uphold it, and I vow to fathom the Tathagata's true meaning. Okay, then turn to page 395. We will continue from there. We are at the commentary. That day we, the last Sunday, we completed the sutra section. So now we move on to the last paragraph, which is the commentary by Xuanhua. Wash your mind clean, said the master, and get rid of greed, hatred, and delusion. So these are the three evil roots. If you wish to realize all knowledge, here the word they use, knowledge, it should be understanding, wisdom. You need to understand the samadhi of one monk, which consists of no dwelling in monk. Means in the midst of monk, you don't dwell in monk. And the samadhi of one conduct, which consists of not dwelling in conduct too. The samadhi of one monk, whether you are in a good place or a bad place, whether moving or still, do not dwell in monks, while in the midst of monks, do not give rise to dislike or to fondness, means the duality. Neither love nor hate should move the mind. The mind should not grasp nor reject. That's why all these are regarding duality. So if you cling on to duality, you will have problem. Neither love nor hate. These are two aspects of duality. So you are not affected. Then the mind should not even grasp or reject. Grasp is clinging. Reject is like practice letting go, want to let go. No such practice. We are both are duality. As long as you create one, the opposite will manifest. Then how can you practice to overcome what you have created? Cannot. Originally, before you create through the mundane mind, through the words, there was none of all this. Then after you create one side, the other side manifests. Then you try to use the same mundane mind to get rid of what the mundane mind has created. Means you want to practice by clinging onto one side, wholesome, good, meditation. That is delusion. If you have a thought of love, you will grasp at the object of your desire. The 12 condition causes said, love condition grasping. Grasping condition existence. So this one refers to a dependent origination. So here their love is craving, attachment. So dependent on craving or attachment, you give rise to grasping, upadana, khandas, upadana. So dependent on grasping, you become that thing. So becoming is the result. Becoming is existence, you become that thing. To reject means to cast away. If you hate something, then you reject it. Love and hate cause grasping and rejecting. Do not calculate advantage and disadvantage. If you think what's in it for me, you are just being greedy, self-seeking, and deluded or impure. Do you understand? You should not have such thought. You should remain tranquil with nothing at all to do, and calm, like water without wave. No wave means no affliction, no love, no hate, no grasping and no rejecting, no advantage or disadvantage, no success or failure. You should be yielding like empty space. Take a look. Everything comes from empty space, and yet empty space does nothing at all. It does not set itself up as boss and say, go, be born, go, die. Everything is born and die within it, undergoing transformation in a most natural way, without the slightest difficulty. Yield and be flexible. If you are flexible, then whatever happens, just happen. That's the way it is. There is no greed, hatred, and delusion. There is nothing at all. With few desire or want, one is content, being without longing or seeking, self-seeking. It is no use to think, wait until my book gets published, I will be a famous scholar. You may want to do something strange to make the world take notice of you, but you should not have such idea. You should decrease your desire, no matter what they are, and always be contented. Knowing enough, you are always happy. Able to be patient, you are at peace. You can be tranquil, calm, and yielding, and leave no marks while in the midst of marks. You can transcend the dust while in the dust. Just that is the samadhi of one mark. So this Dhamma about mark is very important. So now we will go through it. The unique hallmark of Hui Ning's teaching is, the three hallmarks is, first, no thought. Then the second characteristic of hallmark is, no mark. You must have the wisdom to understand all this, then no dwelling. So the samadhi of one mark means you must not hold on to mark while you are in the midst of life, while you are in the midst of marks. We are within existence, within life, the conditioned world. Mark exists. They exist within their own conditioned world. They have their own reality. So with regards to mark, you have to understand what are the mark that Hui Ning talk about. The three aspects, what are they? No mark of a self-cultivating. Then second one is no mark of others. Then the last one, no mark of life or existence or life. So these three, you have to understand. If you cling on to the self, then there is self delusion. If you think you exist, you are so and so, living life, you are cultivating, then you are holding on to the mark of self. And that gives rise to self delusion, ignorance, avijja. Then if you have mark of others, then you will also differentiate. You and the others are different. Then this will bring forth complication too. Then when you cannot understand the empty nature of existence, you give rise to the mark of existence and life. You think life is real, exists. So these three marks, the moment you understand, you can overcome them. So this one is no mark or a self-cultivating. And no mark of others. Okay. This one, no dwelling. You don't have to understand it now. You have to develop until your daily mindfulness is very, very stable. Until you can realize the true mind. Then only you have the ability to live in that state of no dwelling. Means the mind doesn't dwell anymore. The mind is just aware. Either spacious awareness without a center or specific phenomenal awareness is just aware. It doesn't dwell. The moment you perceive, you dwell there. The mind stays there. And no thought is easy. No thought means your mind is completely silent. The mundane mind doesn't arise. So this part is very useful. Okay, we go back to page 396. Oh, we have finished page 396. Okay, we are at page 397. Okay. We have finished the second paragraph. If you are, if you can be tranquil, calm and yielding and leave marks while in the midst of mark, you can transcend the dust, means the defilement or whatever negativity while in the midst of mark. Dust. Just that is the samadhi of one mark. The samadhi of one conduct. This one we look at the commentary. We see what Xuan Hua have to say. Let me have a drink first. The samadhi of one conduct. No matter where you are, in a good place, a bad place, a wholesome place, an unwholesome place, a right place or a wrong place, whether walking, standing, sitting or lying down, maintain a direct mind. The direct mind is the Bodhi Mandala. Student of the Bodhi Dhamma should not be devious. Be direct in your thought, words, and deeds. Speak your mind. Don't think east and speak west. The straight mind is the Bodhi Mandala. If the course is not straight, the result will be crooked. Your mind should be uniform and of one purity. If you cultivate the way towards others, towards yourself, towards everything, be straightforward. Means be sincere, be truthful, be righteous. Don't try to trick people out of their money. No matter how poor you are, if you borrow a little money and return it right away, you have not lost the virtue of a gentleman. But if you borrow and doesn't return, your position is very low. Be an unmoving Bodhi Mandala with a straightforward mind, for that is the realization of the Pure Land and is called the Samadhi of one conduct. So here, the commentary is based on Xuanhua's explanation. It's quite similar, but the one that I gave to you last week is clearer. Okay, we go to the sutta. One who perfects the two samadhi is like earth in which seeds are planted, buried in the ground. They are nourished and grow, ripening and bearing fruits. The one mark and one conduct are just like that. Means they behave that way. So you can have this type of cultivation, then you will progress very well and you will become beautiful. Then the sutta say, I now speak the Dhamma, which is like the falling of the timely rain, moistening the great earth. Your Buddha nature is like the seed, which receiving moisture will sprout and grow. Those who receive my teaching will surely obtain Bodhi, which is the wisdom. And those who cultivate or practice my conduct were certainly certified to the wondrous or wonderful fruits. Then Hui Ning said, listen to my verse. The mind ground contains every seed. Under the universal rain, they all sprout. Flower and feeling, sudden enlightenment. The Bodhi fruit accomplishes itself. So this is the poem, the verse. After speaking the verse, the master said, Dhamma is not dual, nor is the mind. And the way is pure and without marks. All of you take care not to contemplate stillness or empty the mind. The mind is basically pure and does not grasp or reject anything. Each of you work hard and go well in harmony with circumstances. And this is what we mean by accord and flow, in harmony with circumstances. At that time, his followers make obeisance and withdraw. So this part is also very meaningful. So we go to the commentaries. The timely rain falls just when it is needed. If it falls too soon, it will drown the crop. And if it comes too late, they may wither and die. The six patriarchs' Dhamma is like the timely rain which moistens all of the great earth. Your own inherent Buddha nature is like seed which receives the moisture and flourish, ripening into Bodhi fruits. The Bodhi will sprout and become Bodhi fruits. The master went on, you who understand my doctrine or teaching are certain to obtain Bodhi. If you cultivate according to this way, you will surely obtain the wonderful Bodhi fruit. Now that I have spoken so much Dhamma for you, you are probably all flustered. So pay attention while I speak this verse. Purify your mind. So here Xuanhua modified the verse a bit. He said, your self nature contains everything. At the timely rain, they all sprout. When sentient beings suddenly enlightened, the flower opens, the fruit is ripened, and the Bodhi fruit accomplishes itself. So the wonderful fruit of Bodhi ripens of itself. Bodhi Dhamma say the fruit comes to bear of itself. And the six patriarchs said the Bodhi fruit accomplishes itself. They were speaking of all of you who has the Dhamma name Guo. Here he just try to link it to his Dhamma name that he has given to all the students. You should ripen throughout the world. All places should reap this fruit. What fruit? The Bodhi fruit. The sixth patriarch was afraid that you might not have understood, and so he spoke it very clearly. The Bodhi fruit accomplishes itself. You should all ripen on your own. I cannot help you. If you don't ripen, you are just cheating yourself or deceiving yourself. So please ripen. Isn't this strange? Your Dhamma name all begins with the word fruit, Guo. And our school's transmission verse say also, contemplating, cultivating the ever-blissful fruit, personally transmitting the unconditioned teaching. In the future, all you will personally transmit the unconditioned teaching. The master went on, my sudden enlightenment, Dhammadao, is not two. It is one. What is the one? It is just the sudden teaching. The mind is neither two either. Therefore, it should return to the one. The way we cultivate is pure and without mark. Although it is without mark, don't make the mistake of contemplating stillness, where that is just another attachment. Do not loiter in dull emptiness either, because the mind of living beings is naturally and fundamentally pure. The original substance of mind is pure and immaculate, without grasping and rejecting. Work hard, all of you, go forward and don't be lazy. Go where circumstances take you and build Bodhi Mandala, the way place for wisdom. Be good, cultivate good character or conduct, and work diligently or work hard. So that part is Shenhua's explanation. What Hui Ning is trying to tell you is you have to always remember the Dhamma has got no duality. Dhamma is the truth, seeing things as they are, just one aspect. Nor is the mind. He's talking about the true mind. And the way is pure and without mark. All of you, he said, take care not to contemplate stillness or empty the mind. There are a lot of cultivators make this mistake. They hear about this word emptiness. So what do they do? They think it's a practice. So they go and contemplate emptiness. What is emptiness? Emptiness. Then they come up with the idea that the thought tell them. Blank the mind. Or empty the mind. Means don't want to think. If you do this, you are foolish. You don't understand. Then Hui Ning say, the true mind is basically pure and does not grasp or reject anything. Means that true nature is already empty, pure, without duality, suchness nature. So don't try to practice to realize it. It's not a practice. Don't even go and contemplate stillness. You have to understand that true nature was always there. Without the mundane mind, without the stirring of the mind, that true mind is already there. So you just have to relax, silent, aware, to realize that true mind. Without the mental hindrance, your mind will go back to its original state, because there is nothing to hinder your mind from entering the meditative state of inner peace, inner calmness. So this should be the understanding. If you understand all this, you will not make mistakes. Your cultivation will be very, very direct. straightforward. Okay. Then we go to the next part of the sutta. On the eighth day of the seventh month, the master suddenly said to his disciple, "I wish to return to Xingzhou. Quickly, ready a boat and all." The great assembly entreated him earnestly to stay, but the master said, "All Buddhas appear in the world and then are seen to enter Nirvana. This body of mine must return somewhere." The assembly said, "Master, you are leaving, but sooner or later you will return." The master said, "Falling leaves return to the roots. There was no day on which I came." They further asked, "Who has received the transmission of the right Dhamma eye or the treasury?" The master said, "The one who has the way obtained it. The one without a mind penetrates it." So here, without a mind means without your mundane mind. Then we go to the commentaries. Patriarch said to the assembly, Patriarch said to the assembly, "You are leaving now, but we can't believe that you will return. We can't believe that you will enter Nirvana. Sooner or later, you will come back, won't you?" The master said, "Just as leaves fall and return to the roots of the tree, I must go. Besides, there was no day on which I came." The Chinese text read, "When I came, I had no mouth." But this is a misprint of the word day. However, we can also explain it as, "When I came, I had no mouth." On the day when the patriarch came into the world, he had no mouth. That is, he has no words. He did not speak Dhamma when he came, and he did not speak Dhamma when he left. Coming and going, he did not speak Dhamma. The Dhamma does not increase or decrease. And although he spoke Dhamma for many years, so many years, he never spoke Dhamma at all. There was no fixed Dhamma. You can explain it any way you wish, as long as you are in accord with principle. But if you don't explain it correctly, you can explain your listeners right into the hell. And that is taking the unfixed Dhamma too far. The patriarch's disciple, unable to bear the thought of their master's imminent departure, tried to delay him with questions until the master, in exasperation, probably decided that they were just too much trouble. "I'm getting out of here," he probably thought. The right Dhamma eye treasury refer to the rope and the bat, the transmission. So many disciples, and yet not one of them knew who had received the Dhamma transmission. If they hadn't been greedy for it themselves, they would have asked this question. Why else would they be standing by the river and gazing out into the sea? If you weren't longing for the sea, why would you be standing here? Everyone thought the rope and bark was extremely important. But the sixth patriarch was not a businessman. He had been at $65 a transmission. He would have made a lot of money. Who got the transmission? The one who has the way, has obtained it. The one without a mind penetrates it. Whoever has no self-seeking mind understands my Dhamma, because he has obtained the Samadhi of the One One and the One Conduct. So the six patriarchs Dhamma is to be found in this verse and these principles. And if you cultivate according to them, you will obtain his Dhamma understanding. So this is just the six patriarchs way of telling the follower, disciple, that it is time for him to leave them, parinibbana. So the important teaching, the summary, everything he has already taught them. The final summary of his teaching is that three hallmark. But he finally summarized it again into just two things. Samadhi. Samadhi of one mark and Samadhi of one conduct. So the word Samadhi is very important. Samadhi is not concentration, not jhana. Samadhi is the collected mind, unwavering mind, with the wisdom, without mark. That's why Samadhi of one mark refer to this one, no mark. When you are able to have that type of mind that doesn't cling on to any mark or hold on to any mark in the midst of mark, then you have the Samadhi of one mark. Then Samadhi of one conduct means you don't hold on to any conduct. Means your mind is the Bodhi Mandala. There is no thought. There is no dwelling. That's why this hallmark of Vinaya, the three major characteristics of Vinaya's teaching, can also be summarized as Samadhi of one mark and one conduct. So when they ask him who has received the transmission, his answer is very simple. Whoever who have the way, who understand what he say, receive the transmission. Then the second one is what? Whoever who has, when you has the wisdom, when your mundane mind has ceased, penetrate his teaching. That's why his final, what they call, advice to or reply to the follower or the disciple is very beautiful. So I read it to you again. The master said, the one who has the way obtains it. Then after that, the one without a mind, means the mundane mind, penetrate it. So if you understand what he share, what he teach, you will have the understanding and you will receive his teaching. So the one who has the way has obtained the transmission. Means the moment you understand his teaching, you have received the transmission. Then when your mundane mind sees, the person penetrate his teaching. Okay, then we move on to the next section of the sutta. They further ask, in the future, there won't be any difficulty, were there? The master said, 5 or 6 years after my extinction, means parinibbana, a man will come to take my head. Listen to my verse. Offering to the parents with bowed head, there must be food in the mouth. When the difficulty of man is met, the official will be Yang and Liu. Well, this one I also don't understand what he means. We have to read the commentary. remembering the demonic difficulty which had beset the master during his lifetime assassination attempt, arson, thievery, and spying. The master's disciple wondered what would happen when he was gone. Oh, these are referred to how he actually escaped from all those dangerous situations during the first 16 years, I think, before he came out. That's why he said, remembering the demonic difficulty which had beset the master during his lifetime, all the assassination attempt, they tried to kill him, the arson thievery, and the spy, how sincere people came and spy on him. The master's disciple wondered what would happen when he has gone, or he was gone. I know that the sutta does not record all the hardship the master underwent. There were at least 6 attempts made to steal the rope and bar, and the thief were armed and prepared to kill the master, if need to. So his disciple asked, hopefully, there won't be any difficulty like that in the future. Will there be? No one will want to kill us, will they? Will they try to kill us instead of you? Because they are concerned. After Huining is gone, I think the rope and the insignia bag or the bowl is still in the possession of the temple. So people may come after it. So they ask Huining. Then Huining replied, he said, while he was alive, they tried to take his life. After his death, they tried to steal his head. In those days, it wasn't easy to be a patriarch. It's not so difficult today, however, so don't retreat. The 6th patriarch's verse was a prophecy. No one understood it at that time, but later it came true. 5 or 6 years after the master's parinibbana, a Korean man named Chin Tha Pe hired Chan Chin Man of Hong Zhou to steal the patriarch's head and bring it back to Korea so that he could make offering to it. Oh, this is the story. I also don't know. Okay, according to Shen Hun, this is the story. Then Chan Chin Man was poor and hungry. And so he took the money, because there must be food in the mouth. The Korean man was no doubt very wealthy or rich. At the time of the difficulty of Chan Chin Man, the magistrate was named Liu Tian, and the governor was named Yang Khan. The flesh body of the patriarch was housed in the pagoda. Having heard the master's prediction, his disciple had bound his neck with sheets of iron for protection. Chan Chin Man chopped at it with his knife, but he wasn't able to remove the master's head. He made a lot of noise. And when the bhikkhu came running to catch him, they saw a man wearing white mowing clothes run from the pagoda. The bhikkhu reported the incident to the police, and within 5 days the thief was arrested and brought to Nanhua Temple to be tried. Why did you try to steal the 6 patriarch's head? They asked. A Korean man paid me to do so, he said. And I was hungry, so I took the money. I took his money. The magistrate turned to the master's disciple, Ling Tao, and said, what do we do now? Ling Tao said, according to the law, he deserved to die. But in the Buddha's teaching, there are no friend or enemy. Besides, the master predicted this would happen. Let him go. The Buddha's gate is indeed wide, said the magistrate, and he set the criminal free. Oh, I didn't know got such story. So at least now you learn something about the expatriate's story. And the next part of the sutta. The master also said, 70 years after my departure, two bodhisattva, one who has left home and one who is a layman, were simultaneously come from the east to propagate and transmit the Dhamma or transform the Dhamma. They will establish my school, build and restore monastery, and glorify the Dhamma for its hair. Oh, 70 years. Who was it? I also don't know. We read on. The Bodhisattva who had left home was Patria. What is the Mandarin word? Ma Su Tao. What is the actual Mandarin word? Better don't pronounce wrongly. Patria's name. Miss Lee Chang. Ma Su Tao. Oh, Ma Chu Tao Yi. Okay. Ma Chu Tao Yi. He built many temples in China, he said. It is said. Ma Su built the temple. And Pai Chang wrote the rules. Pai Chang was Ma Chu's Dhamma successor. The Bodhisattva who had not left home was, how to pronounce this one? Peng Yun. Pang Yun, or the enlightened layman. Peng Yu. Oh, not Yun. Peng Yu. Okay. His entire family was enlightened. Wife, daughter, and son. And they all went to Nirvana. He's not went to Nirvana. They all realized Nibbana. You cannot go to Nibbana. Nibbana is not a place. That's why last time they have a book. One book which I think they thought he was very very good. Because his title is See You in Nibbana. When I saw the title, I just laughed. I said, how come got people write like that? But later on, when I saw the book, I think inside that he got clarified. He said, Nibbana is not a place. Luckily, he clarified. So this lay person, Peng, has been incredibly wealthy. But he built a big boat one day, put all of his money in it, sail out to sea, and dump it overboard. Why did he do that? Some say that the two bodhisattva are Dayan master, different people some more, Huang Po and layman Pei Xiu. You may explain it any way you like, as long as you pick two persons among a lay person. Layman Peng gave all his money as a gift to use for remodeling the dragon palace at the bottom of the sea. Oh, no wonder. But do they know how to use our money down there? He returned to his home and took up a lowly occupation. And in the midst of their bitter poverty, the Peng family cultivated the way. One day, Mr. Peng sighed. It's hard, it's hard. It's really just as hard as putting seeds on all the leaves of trees in the yard. What do you know, old man, said Mrs. Peng. It's not hard at all. In fact, it's easy. It's easy. It's easy because I find on the tip of every blade of grass. The patriarch's mind. So the wife was so enlightened. She thought it was easy, and he thought it was hard. Then their little daughter came and disagreed with both of them. It's not easy. It's not hard. I ate when I am hungry, and I sleep when I am tired. Means you do what is natural, isn't it? Accord and flow. That's why no need so complicated, isn't it? Then there is nothing to eat, she said. Although Mr. Peng was married, he and his wife were like good friends and did not carry on like ordinary men and women. As a consequence, they became enlightened. Lay people should all imitate their inconceivable purity. So this one is just Xianhua's commentary. If you take it as a story for you to learn, maybe you will receive it as per whatever is spoken in the commentary. But to me, it's not important. Okay, the next part of the sutta. The assembly make obeisance again and ask, will you please let us know for how many generations the teaching has been transmitted since the first Buddha and Patriarch appeared in the world? The Master said, the Buddha of antiquity who had responded to appear in the world are numberless and unaccountable. Means the Samasambuddha that came, they are a lot, means limitless, uncountable. Then the commentary we just go through. Their number is incalculable, said the Master. Besides, I never learned to read or write, and I'm not very good in at arithmetic, so let's not count them. So this is the humor way of Xianhua. Then the sutta continues. But now I will begin with the last seven Buddhas. In the past, at dawn aeon, there were this Vipassana Buddha, Sinhin Buddha, and Vivasu Buddha, Vivabu Buddha. In the present, worthy aeons, there has been Krakuchanda Buddha, Kana Kamoni Buddha, Kasapa Buddha, and Shakyamuni Buddha. So this one is the according to the sutta. Our world system, this is according to Theravada. Our world system, so far, Shakyamuni Buddha is the fourth. Then they say the next one is Maitreya. But according to the Theravada original sutta, the previous world system before ours, they got 1,000 Samasambuddha. They have their name of the last few before that that world system finished. Then ours is a new world cycle. That's why they call this the worthy cycle, worthy aeons. The previous one is, they call it the Adon Aeon. So this one, the Theravada Sutta, they wrote about it. So this part, I don't know the transmission to China from India to Bodhidharma, he transmit the same thing or not, I'm not very sure. But from the way they describe it, it looks like it's correct. Well, the four new Samasambuddha that appear within our this worthy aeon, the new world cycle is correct. But the name may not be the correct one. Shakyamuni is correct, the last one. But the first three, I remember the name are different. Kassapa Buddha is correct. Kassapa Buddha is the one before Shakyamuni. Anyway, we read the commentary by Shen Hong. In the Edon Aeon, Alamka Karakapa. A thousand Buddha appear in the world, correct? So they have based it on the Theravada Sutta. The 998 Buddha of that Kapa was Vipassin. His name means victorious contemplation. Every kind of contemplation, victorious view, or every kind of view. If you just remember Vipassin Buddha, that will do for general purpose. Then Shikin Buddha. Shikin is translated as fire. Vivabu Buddha was the last Buddha of the Edon Aeon, means the previous birth cycle. We are now living in the worthy Aeon, means Bhadrakapa, so called because many worthy sages will appear during this Kapa. Of the thousand Buddhas of this Aeon, they believe every of this world cycle there will be 1,000 Samasam Buddha. Of the thousand Buddha for this Aeon, Krakuchanda Buddha was the first. His name means worthy of offering because he should receive the offering of man and God. His name also means adornment. The second Buddha, Samasam Buddha, was Kana Kamuni. The third was Kashyapa Buddha, and the fourth is Shakyamuni Buddha. So these are the most recent Buddha. So this one is from the Theravada Sutta, is correct. Then the next part of the Sutta, from Shakyamuni Buddha, the transmission went to Arya Mahakasapa. Then Arya is enlightened being, Arya Mahakasapa. Then Arya Ananda. Then Arya Sanakavasa. Arya Upagupta. Then Arya Dattaka. Arya Michaka. Arya Vasumitra. Arya Buddha Nandi. Arya Buddha Mitra. Then Arya Pashra. And I think a lot more until Bodhidhamma. Bodhidhamma is the 28th, if I'm not wrong, the 28th transmission of the Sakyamuni. But these are patriarchs, these are not Samasam Buddha. Please don't get it confused. Don't be confused. Samasam Buddha is different. They appear over a long period of time. But after the Samasam Buddha, the transmission will go to the patriarch. Like what we are having. Bodhidhamma is the 28th after Sakyamuni Buddha. Then the August spiritual trip that we are going in China, we go to this way place called Jizhu San. Where is it located? Lijiang or where? Kunming. Tali. Tali. Tailei. Tali. Those who see the martial arts show on Tali, Yi, Ye Yongji. It's supposed to be one of the swordsmanship type of story that the prince from there, very powerful. Their finger is very potent. Yi Yongji, Ye Yongji. So Tali, Tai Lei. Okay, we read on the commentary. Sakyamuni Buddha, in the midst of the millions of humans and gods who were circumambulating him, picked up a flower, and Mahakasapa, the first patriarch, had to smile. Means he has given the transmission to Mahakasapa. And this happened when he was about to deliver the Surangama Sutta. So the Surangama Sutta had this. So Sakyamuni Buddha picked up a flower and Mahakasapa smiled. And he received. So you want to become enlightened, you go and observe the enlightened being. If they pick up a flower, you smile. This one is not so straightforward. This one must have condition. No one knew what was happening when Sakyamuni Buddha said, I have the right Dhamma eye treasury, the wonderful mind of Nirvana, the real mark, which is the unmark. This is the mind-to-mind seal, or mind-to-mind transmission, transmitted outside the teaching. I've already given it to Mahakashyapa in mind-to-mind transmission. So this one is, we call it the nature-to-nature transmission. Don't try to understand now, because not easy for you to understand. So mind-to-mind seal or nature-to-nature transmission, they are talking about the true mind. When you have the condition, when you are ready, you can receive. No need words. It's just like Bodhidhamma. After he transmit the bat and the rope to Hui Ke. Before he transmit. He was having I think he gathered all the monks. The key one, I think five of them or five of them, I think four or five of them together. Then he tell them he's going back to India. So before he goes back to India, he said, I would like to know what you have, you all have learned from me, from him. So he started asking all the monks. Then the last one is Hui Ke. So all the other monks delivered what they have learned. Means they told Bodhidhamma what they have learned. So Bodhidhamma said, the first one, you only receive superficial teaching, means skin level. Then the second one, understand better. He said, you receive the flesh. Then the third one, go explain deeper. He said, you receive my boat. Then after that, I think he was asking Hui Ke, what have you learned? You know what he did? He didn't smile, he didn't do anything. He just mindfully arise, pay his respect, and walk back to his seat. So all the other three monks that answer thought he was very rude. The teacher asked, what have you learned? And you didn't even answer, you just pay respect and go back to the seat. It was that way that the transmission has been given and is understood. That's why after that Bodhidhamma answered in a very, very nice way. That is it. That is it, he says. You know why? That he transmit the rope and the bowl to Hui Ke and name him the second patriarch. Can you understand why? He just pay respect like that. He come back and sit. And Bodhidhamma understood. So be it. So be it. That's the way it is. Why? Why did he say that? If Hui Ke were to speak, what happened? Oh, you still can't understand. Now wait for the book to come out. The book, we just finished the final editing. So I sent out today. I think Brother Tio should receive it. So what you need to do is the formatting. The content page, after you adjust the spacing. Yeah, this is not adjusted one. The font is a bit small. So you have to increase it, I think, to make it more readable. Then after that, you update the content page. Then after that, get it to the printer to send us the one for the final check. Then we try to get it printed before the end of this month. Inside that sharing, lesson 75, the May class, Sunday class, I discuss all this and I explain it too. But I don't know how many of you at that time heard it. If Huike were to speak, he cannot describe it. Why? Because the Dhamma, the true Dhamma, is beyond word, beyond thought. So the best way to express it is what? To express your gratitude. That's why he pay respect to Bodhi Dhamma, mindfulness. Then, without a word, silent. The message already transmitted. So mind-to-mind seal, nature-to-nature's transmission is like that. No need words. Well, the Dhamma is without words, beyond words. The moment you understand, you understand. When Huike went to seek the Dhamma from Bodhi Dhamma, you know what he did? He kneeled in front of Bodhi Dhamma. Bodhi Dhamma was facing the wall. You remember? For 9 years. Then when he arrived, he kneeled for 3 days and 3 nights. Until the snow was covering his half his body, and then his head, everything was covered with snow. Then luckily, the monk that delivered the food once saw, helped him clean up. Then after the third day, Bodhi Dhamma arise from that sitting facing the wall. Then he knew Huike is the one that will receive the transmission. So he told Huike, why are you here? What do you seek? Why do you kneel in front of me for 3 days and 3 nights? So Huike replied. Before that, his name was not Huike, no. His name was, what was his name? I forgot. The very violent guy that whacked two tooth out of Bodhi Dhamma. The one that he was, when he was teaching the so-called Dhamma, heaven they like shower beautiful flowers and perfume and all those things. So they thought he must be enlightened one. But then he hasn't realized the Dhamma. Then when Bodhi Dhamma came, Bodhi Dhamma actually commented. Then he was very angry. He whacked Bodhi Dhamma. Then the story continued. I think at the beginning of the Six Patriarch Sutta, Shenhua spoke about it. So it was this monk who thought he was enlightened. And finally, when the King Yama was about to call him because of what he has done and all those things, he was very surprised. Then he asked that King Yama's assistant who came and asked him to meet the King Yama. He said, what have I done wrong? He said, how come you come for me so fast? He said, you whack somebody. And that one is an enlightened being. Then he don't believe. He said, cannot be. He said, how can there be any enlightened being? He said, if there is, I would like to meet up with him. Then he said, that was the monk that you whacked. With the two tooth that came out. Oh, he got a shock. Then he asked for permission. He said, I will come back to you, but give me some time. Allow me to meet him first. Where he wants to receive the transmission before he see King Yama. So he really traveled all the way. Then according to the sutta, he met the bird that was trapped in the cage, you remember? That bird recognized Bodhi Dhamma. So when Bodhi Dhamma was on the way back, he saw this bird, and this bird called out to him. He said, enlightened one, enlightened one. teach me how to escape from my captivity. Then Bodhidharma teach him. Pretend like you are dead, you see. With leg and hand stretched out. Then no life, like dead. You see, don't do anything. That is the way to free. So this bird knew. He just did that. Then the owner came back. Saw the bird in that posture. Call the bird. The bird didn't respond, nothing. So this owner started to be emotional, crying, and thought the bird was dead. He said, poor fellow, they must have forgotten to feed you, he said, until you die of starvation. So he opened up the cage door, then received the bird, put it on the hand, then want to find out whether the bird is really dead or not. And when at the moment he did that, the bird opened the eye and flew off. That's how he survived birth and death. So when this monk, the violet monk, on the way back in search of Bodhidharma, saw this bird, the bird free already, told this monk, he said, yeah, you should go after him. He's an enlightened being. He teach me how to liberate from birth and death. Is it escape from death? Is it from captivity and all those things? So he headed in the same direction and finally met up with Bodhidharma. But the story was when he actually, according to the video, this Huaker was not doing all those things. This Huaker was a monk in a monastery. He actually got karmic problem with his hand. He got one hand, he did a lot of killing and all those things. And because of that karmic thing, he cannot meditate. He cannot settle down. And this one keep on giving him problem. Then the abbot knew. The abbot was very kind. Took him back to the temple, talked to him nicely, asked him to continue to endure and stay on, and spoke some Dhamma to him. But it was not easy for Huaker because the karmic thing was so strong. So finally, this monk, Huaker, supposed to commit suicide or kill himself. Until the abbot pitied him. The abbot went to him. All the other disciples couldn't persuade him to come back. So the abbot went. So every time he tortured himself, the bird took his the abbot took his knife and cut himself. You want to die? I will take your suffering on your behalf. Then he immediately softened. He said, no, please. He said, you are my teacher. You don't deserve all this. He said, no. If you do this, I will do it to myself. And because of that, he listened to the abbot and went back to the monastery. Then one day, I think he heard somebody that he went for collection of water, I don't know what. Then he saw some lay people that talk about this monk, very famous, in that temple facing the wall. Well, the emperor tried to get him all, cannot, not successful. And that temple was full of devotees. Because after he was there, facing the wall, without food and anything, it's like the Chinese people think that he must be a special cultivator, monk and all that. And they all offer incense, make offering, and the temple flourished. So he walked all the way to meet up with Bodhidharma. That's why when he reached there, it was the last 3 days. Then after that, when Bodhidharma came up, he talked to Huaker. He said, what do you want? Then Huaker told him, he seeks Dhamma. But he got this problem on his hand, he said. And I suffer a lot, he said. I come and seek the Dhamma. To liberate from my suffering mind and all those things. Then Bodhidharma spoke something that actually caused him to understand. He said, you must remember, whatever that you experience now come from your past karmic. I think there is this Mandarin word. You help me to write it. Pamansuri. He said, 若知前世因，今生受得是。 若知前世因。 今生受的是。 If you want to know your past, what you are suffering now, 的。 No. The simple 的, the with a 木字, not 木, like that one. 今生。 受的是, then the other one, 要知来世因, 今生做的是, 做, what you do, correct, this is very important. When Bodhidharma told him this, he straight away understand why his hand gave him so much trouble. And you know what he did? He took out his precept knife. He chopped his hand off. But according to the other version of the Zen story, he said, not until the heaven rain, the snow become red, I will not transmit the teaching to you. Then when he chopped his hand, the blood mixed with the snow, then it became red. And because of that, Bodhidharma said, a cultivator, if he can even sacrifice his hand for the Dhamma, there is nothing you cannot accomplish. Then Bodhidharma asked him, so what do you want me to heal you? He said, my heart suffer. He said, show me your suffering heart. I will heal it for you. Because at the moment when he said that, Huike was in the state of samadhi, that he cannot find that suffering maya. He was already in that state of samadhi, peaceful with you. Then he replied to Bodhidharma, I can't find that heart, is it? He said, because I have already healed it for you. That's why he can't find. Then immediately he came to great enlightenment. Just like that. So you don't try to go back and chop off your hand and do all those funny things. Because these are conditions that are peculiar to this cultivator. So when he did that, because his faith was very strong. Then when he knew that it's karmic, he just chop it off. Because otherwise he will continue to suffer and he cannot accomplish what he wants. So when he chop it off, despite the pain and all those things, because his mind was so determined, resolute and all those things. So he was in samadhi and he received the teaching. And he couldn't find that mind, mundane mind, that is in pain, suffering. That's why Bodhidharma told him, I have already healed it for you, that's why you can't find. And then immediately he understood. Of course, after that, when he go back to normal, the pain and all those things will come, but he will not suffer. He will endure, he will understand. Then he will just do what he need to do. So when it comes to mind-to-mind seal, nature-to-nature transmission, it's like that. No need words. No need words. But in this case, Huike received it through some explanation. But actually, he also received it through the nature to nature. Because when he was kneeling for 3 days and three nights, he received a lot of very, very good, pure energy from Bodhidhamma. So all this become possible. So this part that Huining was trying to share regarding this what they call transmission of the mind-to-mind seal from Sakyamuni Buddha to Mahakasapa. So it seems the Jiju San Temple that Xu Yun Lao He Sang, the 120 years old monk, he is the 47th patriarch after Sakyamuni. Bodhidhamma 28. So from Bodhidhamma down to him, he is 47. So that temple that he restored at Jiju San Tali, it seems this Mahakasapa during the Buddha's time, after the passing away of Sakyamuni, he went to this place. That's why our spiritual tree, we are going to visit this temple. Mao Jiju, they call it. So this part is very interesting. Mahakasapa transmission. Okay, I read on that, then we try to finish. This is the mind-to-mind transmission transmitted outside the teaching. I have already given it to Mahakasapa in mind-to-mind transmission, or nature-to-nature transmission. The third patriarch, the Venerable Sanakavaksa, was born wearing clothes. And as he grew, his clothes grew along. After he left home under Arya Ananda, this one referred to the Sammasambuddha. Oh, sorry, the third patriarch after Sakyamuni, sorry. Oh, the second patriarch was Ananda, then the third patriarch Sanakavasa. So this one, I don't know whether you can believe or not, he was born with his clothes. Then he grew along. Means as he left home under Arya Ananda, his clothes changes into a great Sangati robe, just before he died, he said. This robe will not decay until Sakyamuni Buddha's Dhamma is completely extinguished. Wow. I also didn't know got such transmission on this. Then the 10th patriarch, Arya Pasha, lived in his mother's womb for more than 60 years. He was born with white hair and white beard. Just like, is it Lao Tzu in India? Lao Tzu in India. Then it says Xu Yun also was born as a rock. Rock. And when the mother gave birth, they thought it's bad omen. But inside the egg was him, and he survived. That's why a lot of these Zen stories got some funny story. Very difficult for you to believe. But don't doubt. Don't doubt. Okay, I read on. They named him Lao Zi, which means old child. But he was actually a reincarnation of Mahakasapa. Wow, I didn't know. Lao Zi was reincarnation of Mahakasapa. He was reborn in China because Shakyamuni Buddha had noticed that the Chinese had good karmic roots. Most of them did not believe in the Buddha, however. So Mahakasapa was sent to China. That's why he founded the Taoism teaching, religion of Taoism, which is the same as the Brahma religion of India. Oh, I didn't know about this. And which cultivates purity of conduct. No, Tao doesn't. Tao is not cultivation of purity of conduct. Tao is a very profound teaching that transcends reality and everything. Go back to the source. Arya Prashwa, the tenth patriarch, was born with a liking for cultivation. When he met the ninth patriarch, Buddha Mitra, he left home, and the Dhamma door of the Buddha's mind seal was transmitted to him. It seems all the transmission from patriarch to patriarch is all mind to mind, mind to mind. Mind to mind. Okay, we end here. So page 408. At least today we cover quite a bit. First time we cover more than 10 pages. Yeah, these are all the stories that are not so important, not so useful. Okay, now you can have your meditation. Another 3 minutes to 4:30. So I give you half an hour. We can off the light. Then you can have your half an hour of meditation. Yeah, you can off the light. Father also still wants to meditate. You can continue, huh? For those who have enough, slowly, mindfully, come out of the meditation. Always remember, huh? Your clear understanding of what cultivation is. When you understand what you are doing in the name of cultivation, then you will never go wrong. But you just do because you believe this is meditation, then you can go wrong. The earlier notes all, I think we have explained very clearly. So what you need to develop as clear understanding of the cultivation is, if your spiritual faculties are established, your mental hindrance will not be there. So you continue to work on your spiritual faculty, then stabilize your daily mindfulness, then your meditation will progress. Then use it to cultivate Noble Eightfold Path. But if your spiritual faculty are still not established, then when you try to meditate, whatever you do, you realize you think a lot. Your heedless thinking is still there because the mental hindrance will arise. When the spiritual faculty are not there, hindrance will arise. And when hindrance arise, you will think. And because of mental hindrance, you will not be able to allow your mind to settle. But when you understand, you work on the spiritual faculty, then while your spiritual faculty has yet to stabilize, you still want to meditate, then you need to decondition your heedless thinking, means temporarily bring the mental hindrance to be at bay so that they don't arise. So mind sweeping method combined with metta is a very good way. Then the other way is the five way that the Buddha teach. Use the third way, the awareness way. Just relax, silent, and let the mind settle down. Then whatever that arises, do not react, do not stir your mind, don't create mental hindrance. Just stay with it. Then everything will happen. Through all this understanding, your meditation will develop. It will go in. Then you can slowly come to understand the essential Dhamma that the Buddha talked about. Why avijja paccaya sankhara? Because you don't have the right view. You have ignorance. You have delusion. The mental hindrance continue to arise. Then you continue to create sankhara. Daily mindfulness is most important. Whatever you do, you have to develop it. So formal meditation is to stabilize your mindfulness so that you can use this trained mind, develop mind state to go into the daily life, to cultivate your daily mindfulness. Then apart from that meditative training to develop heedfulness, you also have to understand the essential Dhamma, especially the Four Noble Truths, the Three Turnings. From there, all the essential Dhamma come about. Then when you understand the essential Dhamma, you will know how to meditate. You will know how to develop heedfulness to cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path. Without the cultivation of the Noble Eightfold Path, you cannot develop the enlightenment. And before you really have the ability to do the cultivation of Noble Eightfold Path, you must understand the essential Dhamma. That's why pariyatti leading to patipatti. Okay, now maybe before I open up for meditation reporting, Q&A, I want you to understand what we went through just now. So this is a very important understanding of the law of karma. The Mahayana, they always recite this two stanza. How many of you don't know Mandarin? Ah, so many. Oh, then I have to explain a bit. But roughly, can you understand the meaning when we read it out to you? Huh? You read it out so you can understand. You need to learn some Mandarin. Huh? So this one is Law Zi Qian Si Ying. Qian Si Ying means you want to know your karmic past. Huh? If you want to know your karmic past. Ah, somebody come and write. The English. Now we write the English one. Who wants to come and write? Ah, tell me. You write here. If you want to know your karmic past. Karmic past. K-A-R. Oh, never mind. Can. But that also can. Karmic past. Then you look at what your suffering is now. Lo zi qian si ying jing sheng shou de shi. Shou is your suffering. Shou ku. What is it? Then you change it. But I saw in the video it's shou de shi. Is it? Oh, means they write it wrongly in the video. Okay. But I saw in the video, the Bodhidharma video, it's so de shi, whatever you suffer. I think it should be de, so de shi. You change back to de, where I saw it on the video, it's de. So de shi. Oh, you know both, right? Good. So your mom can check with you. Okay. So the first one, this one, capital. Capital. If you want to know your coming past, then you should look. Look at what your suffering is. Look at what your suffering is. So your life, right? Especially that day, I think Jin Hao, he came and discussed something with me. So I told him, if this is what is happening to you, because it continuously have this type of thing, then you must know it's from your karmic past. Understand? Well, what you go through, what you suffer, and what you have to confront is the result of your karmic past. Like the Buddha said, whatever that arise, there are causes and conditions behind. And these causes and conditions behind, he has already taught us. So what has he taught us? He said, we are all born of our karma, heir to our karma, conditioned and supported by our karma. And we are what we are because of our karma. So if you look at that phrase, you will come to understand your entire life dependent entirely on karma. So if you want to know your karmic past, you have to look at your life suffering now, this life, what you are going through, what you suffer. Then whatever that happened, you have to learn to have this understanding to accept the reality of the moment. Because this is the result of karmic past. So if you need to ask for forgiveness, you ask for forgiveness. Then if you need to vow not to repeat all this again, but these are wrong things causing suffering to people, then the law of karma says you reap what you sow. Do good begets good, do evil begets evil. You plant the seed of evil, you reap the fruit of evil. You plant the seed of wholesomeness, you receive the fruit of wholesomeness. So knowing this, you will have to act accordingly. Then you will have right view. Right view means I don't blame anybody anymore. I don't get angry anymore. I just have to accept this reality. Yeah, this is from the karmic past. So when I accept, I do what I have to do to overcome all this. The first thing is to repent, to ask for forgiveness, then vow not to repeat it. Yeah. Then through that repentance, because you sincerely seek repentance, ask for forgiveness, the nature's law will somehow operate in such a way that it will allow your karmic obstruction to be broken. Then you can have more condition to recover. Then because you really repent through understanding, then you vow not to repeat all this by following the advice of the Buddha to avoid all evil, do good, purify the mind. No more of this karmic negativity. If you start to do that, means you are starting the cultivation. Then your life will change. Whatever you do will reduce the possibility of karmic negativity so that in future you will not have to reap all those negative fruits. And because you learn to avoid all evil by keeping the precept, then you cultivate heedfulness, train your mind to be mindful of your precept to avoid evil. Then you can later on arise the right effort to develop the virtue, the right speech, right action, right thought, and right livelihood. They are still not in you. So if you do all this, your merits, your virtue will be enhanced. Then you will reap the fruit of all this good action that you have cultivated. Then your life becomes more pleasant. Because the Buddha, under the second stanza, now you write the second stanza, if you want to know your future karma, 要知来世因, if you want to know your future karma, then you look at what you are doing now, or this life. You should look at what you are doing. What you are doing now, or in this life. Yes, whatever you do will condition your future karma, activity, karma. So when you understand this, you will know how to take care of karma. You will know how to develop the cultivation. That's why that Huike, the moment he heard this, whatever you are suffering now is a result of your past karma, then he knew, because the abbot also told him the same thing, but the time he can't understand. Because his hand, last time he killed a lot of people, I think. That's why his hand suffer. His hand, against his will, making act in a way that constantly caused misery to him, suffering to him. like doesn't listen to him at all. Yeah. So when you understand this, you can straighten your view. Then you develop mindfulness to see clearly what life is all about. What are you going through? If you realize since birth until now, your life has been very smooth and very good, means you have your past cultivation. You are inheriting a lot of good things. But if you found out that a lot of things doesn't go your way, you confront a lot of suffering and misery, and you like, your luck is very sweet. Means everything, like most of the things doesn't go your way, and you constantly have problems. Then you know, this is what you did to people. That's why you reap what you sow. Then you have to endure all this. You have to develop the understanding that all these are the result of your coming past. Then when you understand with the right view, you no longer blame people. That's why you can start to accept this reality. You don't get angry anymore. You don't go and blame heaven or blame anybody for the unfair treatment. That's why we did the Tuesday class, the law of karma. The reason for inequality in this world. Why are human beings born not equal? Everyone is so different. Some are born rich, wealthy. Some are born healthy. Some are born poor, under extreme condition, very sick, deformed, and all those things. Then some are born intelligent. Some are born very stupid. Then without proper condition for even the basic need of food, shelter, and education. Whereas some are born like with a golden spoon. Then some are born influential, powerful, with a lot of what they call subordinate or people under them. They end up become CEO, leaders, or king, emperor, president, and all those things, prime minister. Then some are born low, very low, low class, and all those things. So all this inequality is due to karma. And because of that, if you want to have good life, good birth, good parent, good DNA, and all those things, you need to understand this law of karma, then straighten your view and do what you need to do. So now we come back to the part, do what you need to do. The first thing you have to do is to have this right view to accept, okay? Accept this reality. Then when you don't react, don't get angry, there is no karmic negativity. You understand? You don't stir your mind, no more duality. No more blaming, no more arguing. When you accept, means you don't react anymore. You don't get unhappy anymore. You are at peace. So when you are at peace, your mind has clarity. Then you ask, what must I do? What actually happened? What went wrong? Then how can I understand? Then resolve this amicably. So when you don't have fear, worry, anxiety, when you don't react, when you don't panic, your mind is calm, peaceful, then there is clarity. Then you check what actually happened. Then you identify your so-called problem. Then like I always say, there is never a problem if you have the understanding. The moment you understand, problems cease to be. The thing is just the way it is. That is the reality. Causes and conditions are that. Things will be like that. Cannot be otherwise. So if you perceive it with fear and negativity, then it becomes a problem. If I perceive it as a reality, then I do what I need to do. What is that? I accept it. I am calm. I am peaceful. I don't panic. I don't react. I don't develop the unnecessary fear, worry, anxiety, phobia. So all these mental hindrances to be, just like meditation. You don't label it, the mental hindrance are not there. Then you identify what actually went wrong. Then when you identify them, the reality, then you will know how to attend to it. How to attend to it? You have to act. Act with what? Act with wisdom, understanding, following Noble Eightfold Path. If I need to ask for forgiveness, I ask for forgiveness. I need to repent, I repent. Then I vow not to repeat this. Then I cultivate Noble Eightfold Path to avoid all evil, do good, and purify my mind. Then finally, the third one is invoke power of merit. Where when you start to have the right view to change, you actually avoid evil, cultivate a lot of merit and wholesomeness. Your parami, your whatever merits are enhanced. Karmic negativity is like slowly being purified or lessened. As you cultivate, you have less and less karmic negativity, more and more wholesomeness. Then you invoke power of merits for causes and conditions for you to recover, to turn around. That problem can be any of the first noble truth reality. It can be financial problem, relationship problem, disease, or whatever. And you cannot get what you want. Maybe relationship failure too. Then career problem, or whatever. So all this is understanding. When you understand, you will know how to develop the cultivation and act accordingly. So this is how a Buddhist, a true Buddhist, should develop the understanding, then do what you have to do. Don't go and worry about life, don't complain, don't panic, don't react, don't develop the unnecessary fear. Well, all these are negative mind state. It's not going to help you. Whatever that can help you to free is wisdom, right view, understanding. So develop all this. These are basic contemplative understanding, second turning. But it's powerful enough. Then when you put it into cultivation through the understanding, the third turning will come about. Then you start to listen, all the three turning will be there. So this is the part that I want you all to develop the understanding. If you don't have this understanding, you will continue to face the first noble truth problem. Even though you may be a Buddhist for many years. That's why a lot of Buddhist cultivator, meditator, even Dhamma speaker, they have their own problem because they don't understand the true teaching. But when you understand the true teaching, when you know how to conduct yourself and develop the understanding to resolve all these life issues, means you have the Dhamma. So if you can recite all this, it will go in to your nature. Then you determine to have this understanding life after life. I find the Mandarin one very useful. Because it is like a poem. Luo zi qian si yin jing sheng shou de si. I think both the word also you all can use. It depends on your preference. Because what I saw in the video is this one. Then, yao zi lai si yin jing sheng zuo de si. Whatever you do, will give rise to the result of your future karma. So be heedful. The moment you are heedful, you are aware, mindful, you will act accordingly. You will not make mistakes. Then you will have the good life. Then if you are mindful and aware, you can actually learn from life this law of karma. Then you will understand that this law of karma is a nature's law. There is no God up there to arrange. And this God you cannot bribe. Because it's nature's law. You cannot like receive favor from him or what. So this aspect of the right view with regards to the law of karma is most important. Under Noble Eightfold Path, the first path factor, samadhi, right view. First right view is right view with regards to the law of karma. And from here, a lot of the Buddha's teaching come about. The famous advice of the Buddha, Dhammapada verse 183, come from this one. Then all of his essential Dhamma, all the teaching, Dhammapada verse 1 and 2, 21, 22, 23, they all come from this law of karma. Then a lot of other essential Dhamma, they spin off from here. Okay? Can understand? Can you understand? Those who don't know Mandarin. The closest English translation is, because the English word, it doesn't appear like a rhythm or a pantun, they call it pantun, like a poem. If you want to know your coming past, then you should look at what you are suffering now. Actually, it doesn't impact upon you. Then if you want to know your future karma or coming future, then you should look at what you are doing now or in this life, what you are doing in this life. The Mandarin words, if you know Mandarin, is an advantage, because I find the Mandarin words very suitable to describe all these things. And they can make it into like a poem or a rhythm. Okay, any question on this aspect of the Dhamma? Or anybody have any experience in life related to this that you want to share? Anybody? You don't experience karma? You haven't confronted anything? Oh, means you have good life. If you reflect back your life, you will see the great truth in this teaching. That's why you cannot complain. You cannot argue why life is like that, why life is unfair. Nothing is unfair. Everything is in accordance with the nature's law, law of karma. You reap what you sow. Do good begets good, do evil begets evil. But the Mandarin expression is very good. 种因结果, 种善因结善果, 种恶因结恶果. Then they always say 种果得果, 种因结果. Whatever seed you plant, you plant gua is what? Melon. Is it melon? Melon. You plant the seed of melon, you will reap the fruit of what? Melon, isn't it? It cannot be otherwise. That's why he said, you plant the seed of evil, you will reap the karmic friction of evil. That's why the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion, you have to understand them so that you don't unnecessarily arise the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. Because when you develop it and arise it, these are evil roots, root of all evil, make you evil. You will commit karmic negativity. We have people with the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion. They are deluded people. They are foolish people. They create karmic negativity. So you want to find out why the Buddha advised the living being to keep the minimum major five precepts. It's because all these five precepts, only people with the evil roots of greed, hatred, and delusion will break them, violate them. That's why this one leads to evil karma, evil fortune. This one leads to suffering. That's the reason why the Buddha said you have to keep your precept. That's why every day you renew your precept, you chant, Then after you chant, the Buddha to the monk, they will remind you of the importance of this precept. Then precept is the source of the three very important things. Source of peacefulness, spiritual peacefulness. Then source of spiritual wealth. Then precept is also the source of happiness, joy, the first one. The last one is peacefulness, the still mind, the silent mind. So all this is in the teaching. And when you understand, it's beautiful. Okay? So you got nothing to share and no question. Now we will open up for meditation reporting and Q&A. So you can just raise your hand. We will pass you the mic. Anybody wants to report your meditation? Anybody? Karen? During the Samaneri 14-day retreat, your meditation, you want to report some of them? Oh, never mind. How you experience it? How you develop it? Were you able to do it? Do you experience anything? Push the mic out.
Hello. Actually, I have I just know that it's beneficial and good. I just follow.
What you do when they ask you to meditate, you just report exactly what you do.
Normally, I try to like silence my mind as what you thought.
So, are you able to do it? Are you able to relax into it, silent everything?
Yes, in a way, yes. I relax, then also I really gear my mind to concentrate on a few days.
Correct. You are very disciplined and more serious and very determined. That's why you're able to go through. Then you mentioned you experience more peacefulness. Easier to settle down and other things. But did you really experience or encounter any meditative experience that may result in problems? Do you experience pain?
Sometimes when I feel slight pain or whatever, I change my position.
Oh, you change your posture.
Manage to blend into it. Maybe I want to share something about this
karma thing. Okay, that would be good. Yes.
You know, my life, from a beginning, I always very cling to my family.
Like
my siblings are very important to me and all
Then
every time whatever I'll do until I find that they take advantage of me.
Oh, okay. You sacrifice so much for them.
They feel easy to call me to do anything. Then once I say no, they are so unhappy already.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Then I feel like, I don't know why in my nature that I try to please that, no. And I so feel like I'm really pleasing them, but to them, they don't feel anything it's normal, things for granted like that.
So that is what you experienced earlier on. But now with the Dhamma, how you see it?
With the Dhamma, I find that they feel that I changed to be so cold. I just feel that what I need to do, I do. I keep away already. I don't want to stick to them and cling to them anymore. As long as they ask me to do, and quickly go and do my part, then sometimes I think it's not what I wanted, but it's a good result, I feel peaceful. Then I feel can let go, cannot let go. The outcome is very pleasant,
Yes, yeah, you experience something that you have been searching for, the renunciation. Then the other thing you have to learn is, because last time when you perceive them with negativity, because you feel that they take advantage of you, this is what your thought tell you. You understand? When your thought tell you, just like what Hui Ning say, don't try to be calculative. Understand that? But the thought through the egoic mind will say, why should I do all this for them? They take me for granted. They treat me like a sampo. Anything they want, they just instruct me. Then when I don't fulfill, they become not so happy or unhappy.
Not only to family, to friends also. When I started working also, I was...
You feel that you are too kind to them.
Yeah, always do, right, you know, do everything, you know, buy everything.
But if you look at it from the Dhamma point of view, from the law of karma, the thing is the other way around.
You know, I, from the Dhamma point of view, I find that I got a lot of advantage. In the meditation way, my life keep changing, you know.
Correct. Like I used to explain, you need to understand, whatever you do, you will get to receive the result. You reap what you sow. So what you do to people, the goodness, the whatever duty that you do, where you perform your duty as a mother, understand not? Or as a spouse, or as a daughter to your parents, and also towards your colleague and all those things. So if you understand, you do it properly in accordance with nature's law, means you don't mind if people take advantage of you or whatever, but don't be a good-hearted fool, understand? Means if you see the condition, you can express yourself to help or to be of help, you should. Then if you can develop kindness, goodness, gentleness, pleasant, this is cultivating Noble Eightfold Path. Understand? Then when you do your duty, means you serve your children, your sibling, like you say you love them. And the result of it, the karma, is in future you will have parents that will serve you, take care of you, provide you with those things that you have provided your children before. But when you start to calculate, like Kera, then you will get back the karma. In future, you will have parents who will tell you all in the same way. Why so lazy? Want to eat cook lah? You will get that back. This is what you did to your sibling. But because you didn't do this, then your parents love you. They are willing to sacrifice for you. So whatever you do, come back to you. Karma means when you think you give, you actually receive. Because this is generosity, parami.
One reward I want to share is when I was working that time, I really admire people being a housewife, you know, because I work very hard.
So you don't like career lady,
That time, like, because I practically want 3 persons job in the office. Because they know that I'm so soft. They load me with a lot of work.
Oh, okay.
Then
that is very normal. In the government office also same, in the private sector also same. That's why I say don't be a good-hearted fool. If you work very hard, you're very efficient, everybody will want to load the thing to you because you deliver, understand? And you must have wisdom, understand? You only do what you need to do or what you can do within the day. If they load you with too much work, you should go back to them. Which one is priority? I go only 8 hours, I'm leaving soon. Which one is priority? You tell me. Then they will realize that they have been giving you too much work. Then you can tell them the truth. You say 9 to 5. The clock is ticking. I only got so much time. And after that, I have to go back and do my whatever house duty and attend to my household thing. So don't be afraid to tell them. Understand? Then sometimes, like I say, I will be on leave for 2 weeks. You better don't pass to me, otherwise you cannot get this completed. Then you don't come and look for me when I'm on holiday. You have to tell them. That if they understand you, means they are good bosses. If they don't understand you, get angry at you, that is their problem, understand or not? But if you fear to lose the job, then that becomes your suffering. You understand? Because of your fear. What is there to fear? You have done nothing wrong. You just tell them what you feel about all this career thing. Your career thing can be managed in a very beautiful way when you understand. Because society is like that. Life is like that. Things is just the way it is. There are people who are selfish who take advantage of you. There are people who take advantage of hardworking people. Then the bosses are, there is this saying, my classmate also used to tell me, don't expect your boss to reward you or understand you. You know what that means or not? He said, all bosses are kiam siap wan, kedukun. Kiam siap means what? They don't think of rewarding you. Of course, there are some who scared you run away. They know you very efficient. But if you don't open your mouth and talk to them, and I don't use the word demand. When it's time for you to ask, you don't know how to ask. Sorry. When they need you, they will agree. When they don't need you, I tell you, that is the end of your story. Then they try to remove you from the job. Human being is selfish, I tell you. That's why they say, if you know your career path, you understand what the society and the world is, you will know how to approach it appropriately. You will know how to speak out at the appropriate moment. Then they have to pay you what you are worth, understand? I used to study this organization theory, or they call it the what they call it? It's a type of when you come out to work, it's a subject where you what was it? Was it organization theory? I think it's organization. You work towards organization objective. Then, of course, they tell you, nowadays, the old thinking no more, like the Japanese, they are very loyal to the company, you know. Loyalty most important, because the company will make sure their job is there, where they are very loyal to their company. Now, no more. Now, when they need you, they will pay you. When they don't need you, they don't pay you. Now it's no more loyalty. Now it's reality. So when you understand this, that's why I say, they will have to pay you what you are worth. So when you go for interview, especially you are a new graduate, you know what other question they ask you. What is your expected pay? They always ask this question like that. Then you be new graduate, you very shy to ask. Paisei, understand? I think 2005 okay lah. Then you don't know how to negotiate or demand. So I tell you what I did. Oh, give me a minute, my brother. I have to answer. Where was I just now?
Telling about negotiating the pay.
So, my first job, I remember, I went there. My nature is different. You know what I told the interviewer? The director was very happy with me after that. I said, to me, the salary is not the most important thing. I said, you just pay me what I'm worth. That's it. What I want from you is experience, I said. You put me on a job where I can develop all the good experience and work experiences and work ethics, where I can learn things. Because I'm a fresh graduate, I'm a civil engineer. So I know once I understand my career well, once I have the experience, my work will grow, understand? That's why I ask for the thing that is most important, my career path, my career exposure. Then I want to be placed in a job environment where I can develop all this. And the boss was so happy. You know, he was the director, one of the directors. He said, very good, very good. He said, Theo, don't worry, I will take care of you. He said, and he really take care of me. And there were two jobs. And because of what I say, he put me on a very good job. And he also knew my result was good. The other one that also got the offer have to do sales. And I don't like sales. So I went into the technical side and all those things. Then he was pushed to sales, marketing side and all those things, product and all those things. And because of what I did at the interview, I was given exposure to two very important work environment. The first one he sent me is to the Pry factory where they produce industrial concrete product or spun pile and all those things. It was Jurutama last time. Then they set up ICP. Then at the same time, we received a tender award. That time, 6.4 million tender award already very big. The money were very big during the 70s. Then I was put to manage the project as a project manager. I was a fresh graduate. But my this director very good. I think his name is Lim Yong Kiat. He passed away already. He treat me very well. Then the one that recommended me in was also a very good director, Goh Chai Kiat. Actually, he was from my hometown too. And when I was in my third year training, industrial training, I was under the Kuala Selangor Bridge project under him, the JKR also. So we get to know each other. That's why he said, when you graduate, come and see me, he said. I will give you a job. That's why my first job, immediately the day my exam finished, I report for work the next day. I remember, end of February 1979. So a lot of things happened. The first day I went there, I drove my brother's car there. The car plate, four-digit number, came out. And a lot of them strike. Then they say, this engineer, very lucky, Ong, very Ong. Then because of what I did, I got the good job. Then after 3 months, they promoted me. Actually, it was about 3 months because our result came out. After my result came out, he adjusted my pay some more. He said, I will backdate all your salary, he said. Because, like you say, pay you what you are worth. Because I save a lot of money for them under that project at the factory. And he really reward me. And then government service, the government compulsory service, call out. I had to serve the government 2 years. Then I told him, I discussed it. He said, no problem. You want to go also can. You don't want to go, I will make sure you will clear that. Oh, he told me that. I said, never mind, I go and learn about government department thing. I want to know the government service too. He said, no problem, you go. Then what he did was, he just that 3 months, he adjusted my pay and he paid me a very good bonus. That's all I can remember what he did to me. Then after that, he told me, you go back to Alastair to work, he said. Thursday, Friday, holiday, but Saturday, Sunday, you're working. You know. So he said, can you come back in the weekend and help me run this project? Just for half a day, Thursday, and one day, Friday. And he paid me the full salary. I said, no problem. At that time, young graduate. So I love that job. So over the next few months, I helped him to run the project before his new project manager coming. And honestly. Then that car, my brother was very happy. The petrol all free. Then entertainment allowance. Then the car allowance, they pay for my road tax, my insurance, and car allowance. And on top of that, all my petrol maintenance, everything is free. So my brother used to tell my mother, the Arab oil tank is coming back. But at that time, my brother can afford to buy a car, but cannot afford to pump petrol. The petrol is very expensive at that time. Of course, not as expensive as now. But that time, the money is very big, you understand? So even you put one tank, 20 ringgit. 20 ringgit is a lot of money, you know. People's salary is only 30 ringgit a month. At that time, nasi lemak is 10 cent only. Then chabi hun 5 cent only. The money was big, chapan 70 cent, everything. So because of that, I got the experience, all those things. And my director, my boss, was very, very kind, very generous. Then I got married later, end of the year. I invited him, but he was not free. But he sent his whole team, the office and the site people. They came, one group of them came. And of course, together with my boss, Ang Pao, and others. That's why I felt really rewarded for what I did. So you must understand what you need. Not only what you need, what is most important to you to develop your career path. Understand? Then people will know how to pay you according to your worth. When you can have that type of experience and you can help company to make money or to become like to grow. And you can contribute towards the company. They are willing to pay you. Then later when I apply for a job, I no longer say I'm applying for a job. Because I'm here to tell you, what you pay me is nothing. Chicken feet. I'm capable of big things. If you have the, what they call, the company that has the condition for me to deliver and perform. Because of my experience and my skill, I can help you to make a lot of money. And what you benefited from my understanding and my ability, whatever you pay me is just a small portion. That's why one of my job, I managed to claim extra for the company, 40 million. So 40 million, they can pay me for life with the interest from that profit. And that 40 million is not to say that that project was lucrative, then I managed to help them do it. No, that profit, extra profit come about because of my skill, my understanding. I was very good in contract claim. That's why after that, the MD was very, very happy. He never believed it. And after I left the company, the staff there told me, because they used to call me back for their annual dinner. He said, Theo, you know how special are you? I said, I don't know. He said, the boss still talk about you after 5 years you have left the company. So this is what will happen if you have the understanding. That everywhere I go, the company like make a lot of money. And the company grow. They do very well. You don't ask me why. There was one company, before I went over, it was in deep shit, recession. After I went over, not only no recession, they pay cut until level two staff. Then when I joined them, every year they start to give what they call bonus, then pay rise. Then for my case, he said, Teo, you don't leave the company. We every 6 months review. So they give me pay rise every 6 months. And all this thing. So this is what will happen when you have the ability to deliver, to contribute. And people will see all this. They will value you. So Dhamma is very, very versatile. You can apply it across your career, your life, whatever that you encounter in life. Okay? So that will help because your sharing will give rise to condition for Dhamma to flow. Then you will understand the real meaning of karma. Then you will not do all those petty things, like calculative, kera, no more. Then cheat, bribe, do all the funny things. You won't do anymore. You don't have to do, because those things is detrimental towards you later, because later on you will suffer back without you knowing it. Then sometimes immediate karma, it can come back this life. No need to wait for future life. Okay? Yeah.
No, my best reward is what now? I was thinking, I don't know whether I'm able to stop working at the age of 60, you know.
Oh, very good.
But surprisingly, I managed to tender my resignation at the age of 38.
Wow, that is a very blessed one.
Yeah.
Oh, no wonder Tammy follow you, don't want to work. What, 38 lah? Means what? You strike lottery.
Resign at the age of 38, yeah, I don't have to work already.
Means you strike lottery,
yeah. Yeah, I was surprised from not being kera.
Oh.
So I feel this is really karma.
Very good. Yeah, your good blessing. Yeah, your good blessing.
Yeah,
your good blessing.
So from 38 onwards, I never work already. I mean,
wow, very good.
Don't really need to work for people. I work on my own.
Yeah,
own way.
Your own boss.
My own appointment and all
Yeah.
And it's not answerable 9 to 5.
Correct, correct.
So stressful.
Means you are your own owner. They call it what? Sole proprietorship. Sole proprietorship. Means you don't work for people anymore. You work for your own. You have your own business.
Like working work, don't feel like they don't need
to work. Very good, very blessed. Sadhu. Thank you for your sharing. Okay, we got a few more minutes only. I think we better end. Yeah, today I need to fetch my son. He is back from he's back from UK. He went to Europe and UK for 2 weeks holiday. Okay, let us recall to mind for the wholesomeness. Then we will share and transfer this merit to all beings, starting with the devas. Akasata Chobumata Devanaga Mahindika Punyantang Anumoditwa Chirang Rakam Tulokasasana Itta Wata Chamehi Sampadan Punya Sampadan Sabbe Deva Anumodantu Sabba Sampati Sidiya Idang Menya Tinang Hotu Sukita hontu nyatayo, idang menyatinang hotu. Sukita hontu nyatayo, idang menyatinang hotu. Sukita hontu nyatayo, emina punyang kamena, mame bala samagamo, satang samagamo hotu. Yawa nivana patiya sadhu sadhu sadhu. Okay, you can pay respect mindfully to Sakyamuni Buddha, Kuan Yin Bodhisattva, and all the worthy one.
Let self-centered, 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 self-cent